Channel 2 over. This is Channel 2 over. A continuation of the visit with Shirley. This fine visit with Shirley on Friday, the 18th of September, 1970. Channel 2 over. A continuation of the visit with Shirley this Friday morning. And lunch and after lunch with Shirley this Friday, the 18th of September, 1970. Friday, the 18th of September, 1970. Channel 2 over, continuation of the visit with Shirley this Friday, this 18th of September, 1970. The beginning of Channel 2 over and a continuation of the visit with Shirley this Friday, the 18th of September, 1970. Channel 2 over and a continuation of the visit with Shirley this 18th, Friday, 18th of September, 1970.
Called me down one day last week, I think it was, and said that she was coming over to visit with me and wanted to know if I could come with her.
Oh, she did.
And, I don't know what I was doing that day, but I just couldn't turn. Oh, it was wash day, and I hadn't had a thing washed. And I had, when she called, and I knew I had to get them on the line, get them dry before the afternoon rain.
Yeah.
So I told her, I just couldn't go today. And she says, well, I must get over there and visit.
And she's been over once.
She's bad about not getting out and going anywhere. She's like, I stay right at home. And she came over one day, though, and spent the day over there with me. And she started complaining about all her troubles, and I told her a few of mine, and she felt sorry for me and stayed the day.
Oh, really?
But when she starts complaining, you know, about all hers, I'll find a few.
Yes, sir.
Usually we just sort of eat lunch and it's sort of on the way to somewhere else. It's nice to have somebody sit down.
Well, I feel like I'm keeping everybody from their work, huh?
Work?
I know you've got your work to do,
you know,
as well as I. You'll be starting work up come Monday, won't you?
Next week sometime, yeah.
You know, it's a shame that people living out in a gorgeous place like this, that we just couldn't let the days go by, you know, and just stay home and enjoy
we do more than we used to. We stay out here a lot more than we used to.
Good. I don't know, I feel more at ease, more at home since I've been back from Orlando, you know, right there in that place. I don't want to go anywhere, just stay home. I got that rocking chair I was telling you about. I said one day I want to get a rocking chair and put it on that porch out there and just spend the day rocking. I got the chair, it's sitting out there. That chance to try it out.
Well, let me see, you finally give up about the school.
Yeah, I'm just going to send them off and let them do what they can.
Just let nature take its course.
I'm just going to let them get by the best they can. They come in and say, Mommy, what I'm doing is second grade work. What I'm doing is third grade work, you know. I said, well, yeah, you'll get a big education over there at Hawthorne. So,
you can't fight the system.
I don't know if I try. It's going to break me, I think.
Let me tell you, I don't think you're simpler than that. I think everybody has so many things come up all the time. If they get to Sunday school, they do well. But now, when you got something as constant as a school,
mm-hmm.
you just can't handle it. You're just too much else to do.
Trying to keep them well and happy and satisfied and keep them in clothes and everything else, and then having to fight the school too is just too much. I told the kids, I said, I'm going to send you over there, and I said, I'm not even going to attend a PTA meeting, so don't bring home any cards. I said, I'm going to stay here. If I'm minding my business, you go to school and do the best you can this year. I don't even want to get involved. Because if I go over there, I'll blow up.
You can't resist.
No, I've already had the feeling I've got to go over this week. I may find myself over there tomorrow. Johnny comes home and he says, I want to play on the football team. And then he comes home and he says, no. He says, they won't let me. I want to go find out why.
Oh.
If he says, if he wants to play, I'm going to see that he plays. Because out of 52 kids, it looks like he can get in one way or another. So, I'm going to go find out what the trouble is there. And then, too, they've cut his social studies. He's got 55 minutes of social studies. He has a half hour, and then he goes to lunch and comes back for the rest. I don't know. It seems like to me they can cut PE or something like that.
Yeah.
So you have an interruption there, and then come back and try to pick up where you left off. You have to repeat what you learned the last 15, 30 minutes. I don't see where they're going to make any headway in social studies.
That's Johnny.
He's tickled with that. He'd rather get in a whole hour of PE than he would go out to lunch at all. He'd skip lunch altogether.
Say somebody drove up. Is that Buster? That's Buster.
Must be. He left where the gas, whatever it was, didn't fit. He had to go find one.
Yeah, he's having trouble. Oh, they ought to make everything the same size on this.
Every time Berman gets something, a kit or something, he says, well, they give him the wrong size. I said, why don't you check it before you leave there? You know they're going to be the wrong size. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You just can't go around checking everything.
We got down to Daddy's, and he got a kit for the car, because we anticipated having trouble of some sort. And we got down there, sure enough, something blew a gasket or went wrong. And he had the kit to fix it. And he got out and got the car all pulled apart and then took the kid out there and started to put it on. It was the wrong size. I thought he was going to blow a gasket. But he got it back together again. It ran until we got to the nearest service station and bought another one.
Your troubles, you said something about your service station down there. Haven't you got that off your shoulders yet?
Sure.
And they're suing us.
They're suing you. They are suing you.
Mm-hmm. They want a release to the money, deed releases to what they've figured they've already paid into the station. They're giving it up. They want to throw it up. They don't want to take the rest of it. And for the money that they've got invested in it already, they want releases to some of the ground, which would ruin the station for another sale. And we can't do it. It wasn't in the contract. But according to the lawyer, that there would be a misinterpreting part in the contract where it could read that they would be entitled to some of the ground after a certain amount was paid.
Surely.
So, that's a mess.
When did you get started working with lawyers?
I don't know. Some time ago.
When was the first time you ever worked with lawyers?
Let me see. When we had that ground trouble with Kerrigan and Bolin in Orlando.
Way back then?
Mm-hmm. We've always come out. Oh no, we had another lawsuit before then. That was when we advised Mr. Weeks for burning up our property and our fence posts and our fence from our around our 200 acres of cattle ground down there. This northerner, every time he'd come down here, he felt like he had to burn the grass down. You know, instead of mowing it or having it cut or something, he'd get out there and burn it.
Burn it off.
And he burned up one man's house, but they couldn't prove it. And he burned another man's trailer, and they couldn't prove it. So this one morning, I happened to be out burning the trash, and I caught him going down back in our back of our property, which joined Mr. Heights, and then Mr. Heights joined his. And he was sort of on Mr. Hyatt's property, but he's going down the back end of our place. A few minutes later, I saw this flame coming up back there. Smoke, I mean. So I got into this old Jeep, Willis Jeep truck in Berman's, and I went down there to see what was happening. And here he was striking matches, setting them out everywhere. And I had a neighbor with me. We drove up to him and told him, and said, don't you know you're going to set the whole neighborhood with burning this wind, the way the wind is blowing? I said, it's not going to burn just on your place. I said, in this place here where you've got a fire is Hyatt's place, which I thought was ours from a distance. And he said, yeah, but it's going to cut down on the snakes. He said, they'll thank me in the long run. And he was in his 80s then.
Oh!
And you couldn't talk with him. He knew it all. You couldn't say anything to him. So, come to find out, I went back to the house and I looked back again and the whole woods back there was a fire. So I called the fire department, had them come out, and they brought 3 fire engines out to fight that fire to control it. And if it ever got there where the station was, it'd blown those tanks. They were above ground tanks, and they're great big, I forget how many thousands of gallons it held. And I was afraid that they would catch them afire and the whole thing would blow. And there would have gone Bethel off the face of the map.
Yeah.
So.
Oh.
We took them to court, made them pay for all the fence and all the fence posts. And I was a witness, and this neighbor was a witness. It was with me.
Yeah.
We won the case, but it took us almost 10 years to collect it.
Yeah, it's sort of discouraging, isn't it? You just take your .22 gun, the BB gun. And
yeah, that's what we felt like doing.
Yeah. Oh, you had some old law business there. Wait a minute now.
I don't remember. You can remember better than I can. I can't remember them all.
Something you told me. You were looking into the books. Up in the attic.
Oh. That was on the... Let me think now. That was on the Bethel ground there. And this Jewish firm was supposed to take over Bethel. They were trying to take over Bethel, buy up all the bonds. The bonds of Bethel is what it was. We won that case.
Huh?
We all won that case. All the
residents
of the of Bethel, which is the most part B.C. Dodd, which is Berman's uncle. Owns somewhere around 60 or 70 homes there. So.
He does?
Oh, yes.
Oh, you mean he's a financial man?
Berman's daddy?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a millionaire time and time and time again.
Berman's daddy?
Berman's uncle.
Uncle.
Daddy's brother.
Mm-hmm.
See, he owns quite a bit of Bethel.
Well, why? What do you all worry about? Just go down and see your uncle.
Well, he was worried. That's what was worrying us.
Yes.
And then when we found these papers, and he found some papers, and we got them all together, and this Jewish firm didn't have anything to stand on. They couldn't take it over.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So, but it took all that law procedure and a lot of hours to try to dig up all this information. If we hadn't found those papers, we never would have gotten anywhere.
Well, now, how did you... just happened to see those papers?
Well, you see, back in 1918, I think, or 1917, something like that, Bethel borrowed money on these bonds from this Jewish firm.
Yes.
And it was, the time elapsed somewhere in 1927.
Oh, it's a long story for you.
And then there was interest on top of all that to pay back, and it ran into money.
Yes, and the
and
clerk
couldn't
of the
pay
court.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you told us something about it.
So they found these, we found them, but they were in a house way up in the attic of one of these old houses that Uncle Colbert had bought.
Yes.
And no one had ever gone up in there. No one had ever disturbed them. And they were having electrical wire trouble, and this renter was having some trouble in there.
Yeah.
So they...
That was the old city books.
Yeah, that was the old the place where the old city hall, they used to call it, the place where they went to vote, you know. And I remember going with Auntie, you know, it was just a wee bitty thing, into this building while she voted. And I remember all the town clerks in there. And there was Daisy Dodson was one of the head people, and I remember that because every time I remember seeing her when I was a kid, she'd have this mallet, you know, and she'd hit the table with it.
Uh-huh.
And I knew it had, you know, as I got older, I realized she was carrying on business in there, but I was never allowed into the inner room. There was always be these certain people in there. And if it hadn't been for me remembering that, they would never have gotten suspicious.
Why, sure.
But I remembered her being one of the head ringleaders of this meetings. So that meant that she was either the town clerk or something of that effect. And then they went to looking. Well, when they went up there for this wire, they found these books. These great big old-time looking books.
Ledgers.
Yes. And they come across some papers with her name on it, written and some signatures, you know, of hers, written to legal documents and minutes of the meetings that was held there. Some of the minutes were missing. Someone had destroyed one of the books, but her name was on there legally enough to, legible enough to read. So we,
well, look, Shirley. Now, what's your uncle's name? Uncle?
B.C.
I'm a B.C. Is that what you call him?
Mm-hmm.
Or just B.C.?
Big Daddy is what I call him. He tries to run everybody's business.
Big Daddy.
But
well, now, let me tell you, that's sort of the end of your worries. If you've got somebody like that in family to lean on.
That's how he got to be the multimillionaire that he is. He robs everybody, including his own brother.
Oh, Shelly.
Daddy hasn't got hardly a leg to stand on now because Uncle Cobra has taken it all away from him. Daddy gave him the house, the old house, the old homestead.
Yeah.
Right on the, well, now it's worth thousands and thousands of dollars. It wasn't then, of course. But he gave him that old homestead merely for hoeing out a row, fence row. That was his pay. He got the homestead for it. Uncle Colbert really talked him out of everything. And now, you wouldn't believe what we just found out about him. But he has tried to get everything Daddy's got now over in his name so that he would get it if anything happened to Daddy, and we wouldn't get anything. See?
Uh-oh.
We wouldn't inherit anything from him. So Daddy came up here when we bought this place. And he told Berman, he says, when I die, he says, I'm keeping $20,000, 10 which would be yours and 10 which would be Ruby's, Berman's sister. And he said, this is what you'll inherit from me if I die. And he said, and anything else that I've got, he said, if anybody gets a hold of it in any way, he said, at least that will be yours. He said, I want to do one thing to help you. He said, when we bought this property, he said, I want to give you the $20,000 to put on the ground. To invest, you know, in this way. And Berman says, well, Daddy, he says you're not dead yet. He says, you may regret it later on if you wanted to use the money. He says, suppose we buy the ground, you put the $20,000 in it, and we'll pay the rest and make the payments and everything until it's paid for. And he said, we'll leave a will. You make out a will, and that $10,000 would be mine and $10,000 Ruby's. And in this way, he was helping us to make the down payment. And in this way, it was invested in case he ever wanted to change his mind. Well, he said he would. So he did. Uncle Colbert, then last week, it was Sunday before Memorial Day. Uncle Colbert called us on the phone. He said, Buddy, called Vernon Buddy, he says, find those deeds on that property up there that belongs to Daddy. He said, I'm coming up there tomorrow. He says, we're going to get something straightened out. He said, I'm going to borrow money against his grounds to put him in a home, put him in a hospital down here and put him in a home. And Berman was shocked. And the first thing he said, well, he says, I don't have the deeds. Daddy's got them. And he says, as soon as we paid the ground off up here, he says, I gave Daddy his deeds, and we've got ours. And we just deed him part, and then when he passes away, he said, I'm supposed to get part and Ruby part, or we're to pay Ruby for her part, rather than divide the land up. Clover says, well, he says, I'm going to do things different. He said, I'm going to take out a mortgage against that to get him the money to put him in a home. And he was supposed to have enough money in the bank all along to take care of him in case anything should happen.
Sure.
And come to find out, I had gotten Daddy's bank statements down there last Sunday when we left to go down there. We went down to see what we could do about finding those deeds and legal papers and his discharge papers from the service. You know, he had to have them get into the veteran hospital. And I got down there and got Daddy's bank statements, all his bank statements from the bank, and all his deeds and papers. And I come back up here, and we were looking through this, and Uncle Colbert has dwindled his bank account down to $500. And every month, there'd be about $100 or $150 of his pension check made over to Uncle Colbert, or Uncle Colbert's daughter, which was Daddy's niece, or one of Hesse's kids, which is Colbert's daughter's children, his grandchildren, would be going over there getting $10 or $5 from Daddy every day now. I mean, he'd give them to him in check because he wouldn't keep cash in the house. So I have a record of all the money that went out to Colbert or Hesse, his daughter, or his grandchildren. And you think about it, I haven't been mad. I have been so mad, I'm just about ready to bust.
Well, you don't look mad.
Well, I was so mad with him, I'm telling you. And then he had the gall to call here. Well, Berman called him back and he told him we had Daddy's deeds. We went down there and get him. He says, well, I'm coming up after him. Berman says, no. He says, we told him before that we were going to go down and get him and bring him up here and put him in the veteran hospital. We had to go down there and kidnap him almost from Uncle Colbert. Uncle Colbert wasn't going to let him come up here. He wanted to put him in a private hospital where the bill would run up. And here he's in this veteran hospital. It's not costing him a cent. And then Berman told him on the phone, he says, I'm going to bring him home. He says, Shirley's going to take care of him. He wants to be here, and this is where he's going to stay. Well, of course, if I couldn't lift him.
Mm-hmm.
He's bedridden. I wouldn't have been able to lift him. But if he was able where he could get up himself, I was willing to go ahead with it or to get somebody in there to help me. So this is the way we left it. And Uncle Colbert called here night before last. And he says, I'm coming right up there. And he says, we're going to get all this land transaction settled. And he said, your daddy's going to come down here and go into this home where I have Aunt Amy. See, he's already put Berman's cousin out of her house because he took Berman's aunt, put her in the home, and then sent a notice to Helen that the house, that he had bought Aunt Amy's house, and that she had no place to stay, and that she was to move in 30 days. I mean, she was to get out in 30 days. That was his place now. Bought it right out from under her, and she was supposed to inherit that place for taking care of her mother for the past 10 years. That was the understanding between her and all her children. And she has 8 children. And now, and here, she's spending something like $550 a month in this rest home. She's got all the luxuries she needs, of course.
Months.
$550 a month with all these with all these necessity luxuries that she wants. But Aunt Colbert saw that she had all this, you see. Well, in 3 years, she won't have, and she sold her place for $8,000. It was worth at least $15,000. Uncle Colbert bought it, and he'll turn around and sell it for $50,000. And
3 years, she won't have any
3 years, she won't have any money. Well, it won't take that long, mm-hmm. A year and a half. So $8,000 and $550 a month, you figure she won't have. We asked Aunt Colbert Sunday when we went down there to get Daddy what's going to happen to Aunt Amy when her money runs out. He says, well, I don't know. He says, I wish Helen would get off her high horse and go see her mother. Now, Helen's the one that's been put out in the street with her husband and 3 children after taking care of her mother for 10 years and giving up 2 homes that she started herself and lost all that. Gone in the hole, really, because they bought it on time and they had to give it up when they left. And now he's got her at her home. And Uncle Colbert says now, he says, I wish Helen would get off her high horse and go see her mother. And I said, yes, so she can turn around and take care of Aunt Amy again when she gets out of the home. He says, yes. He says, somebody's going to have to do it. I said, let one of the other 8 children do it. And Helen's had enough. I said, I wouldn't even speak to you or Aunt Amy again if I were her. He doesn't like me now. And the funniest part about it, I dated him before Berman and I were married.
Oh, you did?
unwillingly, but I did. I did this in a roundabout way to get back to Vermin, you see. But he's old enough to be my grandfather. And now he and I are just about as wicked as we can be. Whatever he says, I come right back with an answer. You know, it makes him mad because I won't treat him like everybody else does. You know, like he's Big Daddy, and they don't dare talk back to him. But I'm the only one that speaks up to him. I won't take any more out of him. Not after what he did to Daddy.
Well, where are the deeds? Have you got the deeds?
We got them, but they may not be worth the paper they're written on.
Why?
Because he could have had, when Daddy was out of his head here about a year and a half ago, we think that he made over a will to Colbert willing him the whole entire place.
Well, he can change it.
Well, it's the one that gets to the courthouse first, after he passes away, and we have a deed. And now, if we get there first before Uncle Colbert does, which we could here, down there, I don't care anything about that property down there, but I don't want him to have anything on this ground up here.
Oh, you mean he can take your place?
Yeah.
Charlie, you better straighten it out with your daddy.
You can't talk him into signing anything now because he thinks everybody's against him, you know. One day he wants to give it to Vermin and I and Ruby. And the next time he turns around, he won't sign nothing. He won't sign anything.
I just have it there ready for him to sign. I don't mean to tell you what to do. I'm just talking.
Well, he won't do it, though. He's just that bullheaded that he just wouldn't do it now.
Yeah.
But, why
should I? Well, now you can do that and mend your cow's leg, too.
Do what?
Doctor your cow and work on this other stuff too. Well, you're a better man than I am, Brother Shirley. I couldn't do that.
I don't know. I can't do anything right.
I just go down there and shoot somebody. That's all I'd be able to do.
Oh, I'm telling you, I've been mad. I've been laying awake at night. You know,
in your own time.
I don't believe you have. I think you just go to bed and sleep like.
That's what Berman. He said I never saw anybody go to bed and sleep as hard as you do. But I'll wake up and I'll think about that and I'll lay there and burn.
I'm going to make you stop talking and go ahead and
get
your lunch.
Why? She had
to eat
her
lunch.
I've been jabbering away.
Let me give you some more of that stuff.
I get going on Colbert. I can sit here all day and let you know a thing or two about him.
Shirley, I think every now and then about how people's plans are interrupted. You know, when you were going to, before you took off, give her a little more.
Sure.
Give me a little.
It's good. It's delicious.
Put in it.
I must get this.
Before you, you know, when you all went to Iowa, Vermin, that when he was over here, while you all gone, when you all took off to Orlando, I didn't think I'd ever see any of you again. I'm just accustomed. I'm just conditioned to people I know just.
Just disappearing?
It was the saddest thing you've ever seen. I couldn't even smile.
No, I did this to save this place here, because he would have turned around and he'd have sold it for nothing at that time. Vermin was determined he was going to get away from all that mess.
Oh.
So that's why I did it.
Oh, this was one of the things bothering you too, then?
Yeah. It was him that I did it for
he
more than anything.
He just sew up this place
that's
and
it.
Go
he,
on to
that's
somewhere
it.
Else.
Yeah. He wanted to move north because they're not having the racial problems up there that we are down here. And that's the main reason why I did it. To get him to see, you know, what he did have, evaluate what he did have here.
I remember. When you took off down there, we had made it up that you were going to keep an eye out for those Sand Hill Cranes.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to go out there in the car and sit and watch them right out there on your property.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you see where that got us.
Yep.
we even lost track of it.
Well, the birds even left. That's no joke. They left. Every one of them left.
Yeah.
And they'd been there for years.
They went somewhere else.
They did.
And for no reason.
And they're back. There's 20 pair of them back.
Are you all back?
They come back since we come back. Mm-hmm. Right, now you figure that out. I can't. I don't know where they went to or what happened to them, but they left their nesting and everything and went off.
Well, we sure didn't see that dance, did we, this time?
No. Nope. But it happened evidently late and since we've been back, because Bonnie saw, she counted 40 out there. That was 20 pair. So they evidently had their mating season there, but it was back further in the field.
Well,
and I was still so distraught about the whole thing like, and moving back and forth that I didn't even go down there to look at them.
I think that was it.
So,
and I didn't help you any.
So
I thought about it a number of times.
Why, surely I didn't pass an open.
Miss Guthrie never has anything like that. All her troubles are minor.
Yeah, and then she thinks she has troubles. That's what I meant a while ago. She came over to see me that day. Crying about her troubles, about her hay baler, and about having to buy hay and not having any hay for the cows, and she didn't know what she was going to do. And I said, listen here, and I just filled her in on a thing or two. And actually, I think she was crying and trying not to let me know it. And she says, well, I don't know what you're going to do. Then she was worried about me, worried about us, you know, and she forgot about her own, though.
Or maybe that's a good thing sometimes.
I never get any information much on Miss Guthrie. She's not, you know, she wouldn't sit down and talk about information like you do. She doesn't seem to have that turn. But I know every time she speaks to y'all, she is. I mean, you know, she's right attached to you, you know.
Yeah.
And, she may cry. She says that vermin does not got as innocent. And then she laughs.
Yeah.
And she says, I'll tell him. I told him so. Now, I made that up. But the way she does, whenever she tells you where she told off somebody, she laughs. And you know she didn't say it.
You're learning.
But I don't know. Now, you see, I wasn't there.
She's a corker.
No, she is a bird. Did you know she had pets at one time?
Mm-hmm. She used to be, and old Mr. Guthrie is the way Berman is. He didn't want him on the place. So, I don't know how that ever came about, but anyhow, she had a little bit of everything like we are over there.
Yeah.
And she had an old, she was telling us about an old hoot owl, screech owl that she had for a pet. And she loved that thing. And he kept wanting to get to the chickens. And those were Mr. Guthrie's, old Willie Guthrie's chickens. And he said, Mary, get that thing out of here. And she said, no, she said he's not going to bother the chickens. She said, if he does, I'll wring his neck. So she got scared, and she was afraid he'd wring his neck, so she took him over here to Williston, McIntosh, someplace, and turned him loose. And went home, and that night he came back. And he got him a chicken.
No.
And the little Willie heard the chickens squeaking, screeching their heads off, you know, and he went out there with a gun. He's going to see what happened. And he put the gun down, he got a hold of that screech owl, and he just went...
And he went in.
He didn't hurt it. That was the funniest part about the owl took off, and he hasn't been seen us since. She wants another owl. She's been after me for 3 years to catch her an owl. Ever since Mr. Guthrie died. But she wouldn't know another one while he was alive. And to hear her tell that, I laughed until I thought I was going to turn.
Oh, really?
Get her to tell you about it.
What brought it up?
I don't know. The monkey, I think.
Yes.
I mean, she can't stand that monkey.
You never know whether she can't, or just...
She let me know, though, she don't like that monkey. She's scared to death of him. She likes him, but she's scared of him. And he got in the house.
I am, too.
He got in the house, and I was chasing him with a broom. He sees that broom, and he makes a beeline for the door, and he gets out. You know. And she was scared he was going to jump on her.
Yeah.
And boy, she made a... I never saw her move so fast. And she got on the other side of that room, and look at this butt. She got over there, and she turned around and looked at me. She said, I'm scared to death of that thing. I said, you are? I would have never known it. She said, you know what I want? And then she went on telling me about the screen. I thought I'd die laughing.
Yes. Now, you know, I never heard talk about those pets. But, you know, here, there, yonder, I always, when I'm passing over there, if I see them, I'll stop in a minute. I don't stay long because I'm afraid I'll, you know, interrupt what they're doing. And she and Marvin were talking one time, and I can't remember now, it's been a long time, but I somehow got the idea that when she was bringing up them boys back there, you see, all that ancient history that I don't know about, I think it's back in the 30s, along in there. She was right young, very young, and worked hard, and Mr. Guthrie was in his prime, you know, and that was a household at that time, you see, and she didn't have any children, but she brought up these others. And Marvin wasn't there then. That's when Marvin came.
That was when she raised James.
Who's James?
The guy that hurt his leg, you know, got his leg crushed.
Oh, was he the one?
Now she raised him.
Yes.
So she calls him her boy.
Yes. Well, now who else did she raise?
Well,
I hear her talking about these boys she raised, but I never get it straight.
Just him, as far as I know. Then she had something to do with another child belonging to one of the Townsends.
Oh.
She, and then there was a girl that came in there that got in trouble, and she took her in and took care of her baby after the baby came.
Oh, really?
And she took care of that baby for some time. And when it was 5 or 6 years old, the mother came back and got the child.
Yeah.
And after she had grown attached to it.
Oh.
So really, she's had her heart broken, you know, a few times over him. But
yeah.
Marvin didn't come there until he was 17.
That would be.
He's 55 now. 55, something like that.
And he was 17. He is old enough to take care of himself.
Yeah.
You know, I look at Miss Guthrie, Miss Mary, and it's surprising. She's not as old as I thought she was.
No.
Mm-mm.
No.
I thought she was, I don't know how old I thought. I never think about age. But I just thought, you know, she's not.
Oh, she's not near as old as I used to think she was.
She's not terribly much older than me.
I'm like you, I don't pay any attention to age, but I took her into the hospital when she was sick there at that time. And they were filling out her papers, you know, to get her ready to admit her to the hospital.
She married in 25, and she was not 20.
Mm-mm.
So that would take it back 1905. That would make 65. That would catch it, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Somewhere around there.
Yeah. Now, she would take care of herself.
65, 68, somewhere around there.
And she'd take care of herself now about this pressure. You see, I don't know whether she will or not.
I've tried to tell her, and the doctors have taken her off of this fat.
Yeah.
Me, I don't know how in the world she can do it. She just fill her plate with the fat part of the meat.
Yeah.
Dog meat is what I call it. I give it to the dogs.
Yeah.
But she'll eat that, and she wants beef and pork at the same time.
Yes. Oh, really?
At the same time, she'll have a beef fat here and pork fat on the other side, and the biscuits and. Ugh.
She's had,
that's enough to make anybody's arteries harden. Or
I was over there one time, and they had, it wasn't been long, Suzanne went with me, and that was the morning we come over there and saw you come, and she had some boiled peanuts. I told her no, I couldn't stand them, that she just loved them with beer. You eat peanuts and drink a beer. Well, I says, that's, what was it? She almost went out. She said she ate some boiled peanuts and drank beer and almost went out. Was it blood pressure? Well, I said, that would be a pleasant way to go.
If you want to go that way.
But she said, no, it wasn't. It made her sick.
That's funny.
Boy. She is hastening along a little bit with that beer and peanuts.
What is that, excuse me. What is that, but I forget what it was. Now, it wasn't the owl that she was talking about that time.
And she's had numerous
seemed like it's
not a pet so well.
She used to have, when the boys were over there, she used to have some pet coons or something. You never heard about that?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I got the wrong idea.
He used to trap, and I know she talked about,
yeah,
you know, coons being $5 or something like that. Skunks. And
we had some pet skunks over there when we first moved there for a couple of years. We had them in a pen. One was a male and one was a female. And we had more. Boy, oh boy. She came over that one time. She'd been there, and I told her that the skunk's cage was getting sort of smelly and I wanted to clean it out. She didn't stay very long. She left. She disappeared, as a matter of fact, when I started working, you know. But I was determined I was going to get that done before the kids got in from school, because they get out there and they get messed with. They weren't de-skunked. Merman caught them in the middle of a field. Now, hey, you talk about a person that hates skunks, hates animals, and he goes out there and he caught those two skunks, and they really messed him up.
Oh.
Yet he went out there and he caught them. Caged them, and he wanted to make pets out of them.
They were adults.
No, they were babies, but they're just big enough to do the job.
Still,
they were following their mother, you know. And we both caught him. He caught one, and I caught the other. To tell you the truth, and he got the worst end of the deal. And I made him sleep out in the wash shed that night. But we put him in a cage. We were going to get him de-skunked, and then we found out the vets didn't want to have anything to do with him after they got to a certain age.
Oh.
So we were going to make pets out of him anyhow, and we did. And they never did, once again, raise that fuss. So we fed him and took care of him, and I took him out of the cage and put him in this box, and I set him there in a cage, and I had no top on it. It was just a wire cage while I was cleaning out their cage. And I fed him, gave him some water. No, I didn't give any water. And Mrs. Guthrie came over, and I was talking with her, and I told her I was in the middle of cleaning after we'd visited a while. Well, she left about 1:00. And about 1:02, I told her I was going to finish cleaning out the cage, and that's why I said she disappeared. And after she got down the road, and I just about finished up with the cage and put their feed and their water in there, and I went over to check the skunks, and they had passed out from the heat. They had a sunstroke. I'd left them sitting where the sun got to them, you know, and I hadn't looked at them. They were in the shade when I left them there, but of course this, later on in the day the sun got to them. So I thought they were about dead, and I picked them up. One was moving, so I picked her up a little bit and put her in the cage. And the other one, I picked it up and I thought, oh, you poor animal, you know, and I felt so bad because I did it. And I was going to try to revive it. It was still breathing, but it was weak. So I was going to try to revive the thing. And I picked it up, and it was full grown by this time. And I took it into that cottage there where we were living. And I got some newspaper and I spread it out and put the skunk down on top of it, and he wouldn't move. He's just out, just like he was dead. So I went over to the sink and I got a pan of water, come over and I started washing him down, you know, wetting him down with the water. He still didn't move, so I went and got a fan and put the fan on him and washed him down, put a rag over his head, and I slipped a pill of aspirin in his mouth, and directly that thing came alive. And I don't know what he thought, but he thought right then, you know, the animal instinct came back to him, and he was going to protect himself. And he woke up, and I thought I had plenty of time to get him to the cage. So I started walking, and she had remembered something. She had forgot her purse or something. She came back. And here I was walking out with a skunk, and she took off, and I didn't see her for about a week after that. And I told her, I said, well, I was just, when she came back over, I said, I was just reviving the skunk. I said, he had a sunstroke. She said, you did what? I told her what I did to her. I thought she'd die. But it had a sunstroke, and they were just about dead.
And did revive
it. Yeah, I did, and I got him back out of there. You never saw such a healthy-looking skunk a little bit later. But the other one, I just squirted him with a hose in the cage because he was moving a little bit. That one came out of it.
Let's see,
but, oh, here I was in tears, you know, because the kids had already gotten so fond of the things, they'd get in there and play with them. And but I was always afraid they'd hurt one of them, you know, and get the treatment. But
you know, way back I used to go in the woods there. This was over in Arkansas, over in the Ozarks. And all those little houses in there was built way up off the ground. And the woods are just full of skunks. And most of the time it's quiet. But we could hear things going on under the house. And it's very seldom. Sometimes they'd get upset and they'd squirt each other.
Mm.
And the first day or two, you know, the odor was right strong. But you know, and then it died down. And you know, I got to where I sort of missed it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't
mind. We don't anymore. We have.
When it's fresh, it's not. It's raw. But it. Mm-hmm. And they tell me they use that in perfumes. It's as a base. Now I don't know what they mean by that.
Well, I'm sure Bourbon would agree with you. Some of it he doesn't care about. But I don't know. I've heard that too, but I don't know whether it's so or not.
Nobody ever bought them. They didn't have dogs in there. But every now and then, they'd get the plant too rough, I guess. And you'd smell it for a day or two.
Mm.
It'd be right strong. But I never found it unpleasant. That's good. Well, it was in the open, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't on anybody.
Boy, that one that got burned, huh? We washed that suit of clothes time and time again. I think I finally ended up throwing them out because I never could get that smell out of it.
Oh, really?
It wasn't so much that it bothered me as it was it bothered everybody that came around, you know. So,
yeah,
get rid of the smell, we just got rid of the clothes. And I think one of the kids got sprayed there one time. But that is an awful order to try to get rid of.
Well, you know, Shirley, I don't have any pets at all. Faye had a little dog over here one time. She just attached to the dog. And I could see right off, she'd get up, let him out. She'd always run into town to buy him a tick bracelet or something.
Mm-hmm.
I could see you could raise a herd of cattle just about on the energy you'd put into one pet.
That's right.
You'll watch out.
That little poodle, now I've always got something to do for it, you know, since we brought him back here. Right now I need to catch him for the last week. It's drove me crazy because I haven't taken the time to catch him and clip his feet, you know, hair around his feet.
Now,
he tracks in more sand than the kids do in the house.
Yeah. Now, if you've got, you know, a family as large as yours, it's a little different, see, but just a lot of people coming and going here, but by and large, Faye and I do the work around here.
Yeah.
And there's too much, there's not enough people sharing what has to be done. So.
Well, I don't know. Each of the kids have got their jobs to do, but you know you have to get around behind them and make sure they're done. Or if you don't, something's going to go without feed or water or something, you know. You've got to
just mark it off.
No, you gotta sort of follow around. You can check them behind them. It takes a little bit of time, you know, going back behind all those animals. But they're pretty good about taking care of them.
Shirley, on the school, I understood what you said. The hours each child goes will be so different, broken up, second to the day. They keep you on the road all the time.
I'd have to come over here to McIntosh if they went to Ottawa. I'd have to come over here first of all, there'd be a 20-minute time period between the time Johnny would leave and the time the other children would leave, because he has to leave earlier. 20 minutes later, the other children leave. They're going to three sets of separate schools.
Mm-hmm.
No, two separate schools in here. They're going to three separate ones here in Hawthorne. Johnny would get in at 12 o'clock, so I'd have to come over here and pick him up at 12. Then he would be cut 10 minutes on each subject in order to go into Idlewild school because of the split sessions that they're on. And he can't afford to cut any time from his subjects. He needs full-time subjects. And I can't see where they say that they can cut it 10 minutes off each subject for 6 months. He would go in the morning, and then for the last 3 months, no, from January, he would go in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. So then you'd have another schedule. You get about used to one, you'd have to turn around, you've got another schedule on that one child. And the others would get in at 2:30. So I no more go over there, and I couldn't leave Johnny sit at the bus stop from 12 to 2:30. No, they get out 12 to 2:30, so it'd be around 10 minutes to 3 by the time they get out here. So I'd have to come take him home, and then turn around just about and come back and get the others about 10 minutes to 3. And then go home again. And that's every day, and I just couldn't keep up with those hours.
And I doubt there's that much difference in the school.
That's it. That's it. There might not be any more different.
Yeah.
They're racially mixed to a certain extent. But Idlewild School has very, very few in there.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you, so I don't want you to stay too long.
I'm going to have to
Faye,
go back.
If you want to see those cows, you can ride over with Shirley, and I'll drive over there and see them and bring you back.
What, now?
If you want to.
Okay,
or else I'll just, I'm going to, I guess I could wait. When will you be out there with the cows? Later?
Well, they come up around between 5 and 6 o'clock.
5 or 6 o'clock.
It's about time they come up
there.
Around
5 or 6 o'clock.
You know, well, that'd be about the best time to catch them.
Yeah.
Come up. But I got that one that's hurt up there in the pen, so you can see her anytime.
Oh, it's right at 9 in the heat of the day. They won't be done.
No,
they'd
probably
be under the shade of the tree. And then you disturb them, and then they start running to the back of the field. The others, if you can see them. That one, though, that's hurt, I got her in the pen. And I got a little bull that's got pneumonia. I was kind of, I don't know what was wrong with me that day. I was talked out of him. That was one of my shenanigans. That Harry Smith that come over there, he bought two cows from me here about a year and a half ago. And
he
sold them back to me.
He's a watermelon man.
Yeah. And he sold them back to me. And one of them had a heifer about 4 or 5 months old. I guess she's over about 5 or 6 months old. And a little black white face. And now both these cows was registered. And he took good care of one, but he didn't take very good care of the other. And he let her get bred. That's the one that had the calf. And the other one, she was bred too early. Well, I went ahead and bought them back. And this calf. And in the boot, he had another bull calf. It was a purebred, but it was never registered, that he got someplace else. And it was the same age as one of these registered purebred bulls we got from the Santa Fe Ranch. So he made me a deal to sell me back those two cows and that calf for $250 a piece for the cow and $50 for the calf, which is $550. And swap his bull for mine. So I did it. And that bull has pneumonia so bad I don't know whether we're going to keep him or not. That's been 3 weeks ago, and I didn't know the calf was sick, but he did.
Shirley, who can you trust?
And so now I've got to give him a good registered bull for one that I might lose. I had the vet out yesterday. He gave him a shot. He said, "Boy, this calf's got pneumonia. You have to work with him."
What do you do?
So he gave me some medicine to give him a shot. I gave him one last night. I'm giving one again this evening. He was eating a little feed this morning, but I don't know. He's awful weak. So I got him to take care of, and I may lose him. I don't know, but. I wouldn't sell anybody a sick animal.
Faye got a horse over here that's got a cough. Maybe Shirley will take care of the horse for you, Faye. Let her take that.
Why don't you take this one? I give her medicine at night and morning. You can take her home with you.
Yeah. Nurse made her all hours. And I'm telling you, if I get one more in that pen out there, I don't know what I'm going to do. I got the bull in there I want to feed until he's 2 years of age. And anyway, you know, keep him in close quarters. And then that cow that's got hurt. And I got one in there, one cow in there, hoping that she'll call up the calf from the field, you know, so I can put the calf in another field and wean her. I caught her in the pen, so she's in the pen with the bull and this other cow that's hurt and this little bull. So they're all in that one little pen.
And that pen needs cleaned out?
No, no, no. This is the one that where I want to keep the big bull out there under that shelter.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I get any more. I think I'm going to forget about going to the house entirely. Just stay at the barn. Just take my bed down there. Well, that was mighty good dinner. I couldn't eat everything, but it was good. And
well,
I'm not used to sitting down to dinner at all because nobody's home. I just keep working.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's
why
it's sort of fun, you know, every once in a while to do this.
Yeah.
Yes, I know. Sometimes this is the year while the kids are in school, all in school the same day, I had Tommy home yesterday because of a sore foot. Now Bonnie's home today. Well, would have been home today because of her ranch.
Yeah.
And one day when they're all in school together, I'm going to go in and go out to dinner with Berman at a cafeteria someplace. And it'll be the first time
just
since we were married.
Well, that was going to be fun. Yeah.
Just take the day easy.
Well, you brought them up. They can take care of themselves. They can run the place for a while.
At least until 4 o'clock when they get in from school.
Yeah.
You coming out to the place now, or are you later? Or?
I'll wait later.
Alrighty. Well, they'll all be up around 4.
Alright. Then I get to see some of the others.
Alrighty.
Now, this is Channel 2 over. Channel 2 over. This is Channel 2 over. This is Channel 2 over. And the end of this remarkable visit with Shirley. This Friday, the 18th of September, 1970. Got here about 11 o'clock and stayed for a bite to eat. And we talked after at the table. This Friday, the 18th of September, 1970. And just remarkable. Just remarkable information. The talk, Shirley doesn't have her outdoor voice yet or now the way she used to. And this is the end of the visit with Shirley this Friday morning and noon after lunch, the 18th of September, 1970. The end of the whole tape, Channel 2 over. This is the end of Channel 2 over around 8:65. Around 8:65, the end of the tape. The marvelous visit with Shirley. We had to talk so the summer wouldn't get away from us. This Friday, the 18th of September, 1970, Channel 2 over, 8:70.